Welcome, everyone, and Merry Christmas. I want to welcome each and every one of you, whether you're here every Sunday, whether you're just back from college, whether you're only here once a year. I want to remind you that we are here every Sunday morning at 10:30. It's really wonderful to have you all here to enjoy all of the beautiful sounds, especially of the season. Thank you so much, Jackie and Ellie, for such a beautiful way to start our service tonight. Our call to celebration, the moment of magic. Now is the moment of magic when the whole round earth turns again towards the sun. And here's the blessing. The days will be longer and brighter now, even before the winter settles in to chill us. Now is the moment of magic when an eastern star beckons the ignorant towards an unknown goal. And here's the blessing. They find nothing in the end but an ordinary baby, born at midnight, born into poverty, and the baby's cry, like bells ringing, makes people wonder as they wander through their lives what human love might really look like, sound like, feel like. Now is the moment of magic, and here's the blessing. We already possess all of the gifts that we need. We've already received our presents, ears to hear music, eyes to behold light, hands to build true peace on earth and to hold each other tight in love. And so we light our chalice this evening for this magical moment of Christmas that reminds us of all that we are, all the blessings we have, and all that we can be in love. I invite you now to rise in body or in spirit, and let's sing, O Come, All Ye Faithful. Have been lighting candles for weeks now. Candles of joy despite all sadness. Candles of hope where despair keeps watch. Candles of peace for tempest-tossed days. And candles of love to inspire all our living. And finally, the long wait is over and Christmas is here. Our hearts are open. We're ready to receive a great gift The moment is at hand. Please be seated. Your turn, my friend.
This is a reading from Luke. And it came to pass in those days that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed. And all went to be taxed, every one into their own city. And Joseph also went up from Galilee, out of the city of Nazareth, into Judea, unto the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, to be taxed with Mary, his espoused wife, being great with child. And so it was that, while they were there, the days were accomplished that she would be delivered. And she brought forth her firstborn son, and wrapped him in swaddling clothes, and laid him in a manger, because there was no room for them in the inn. And there were in the same country shepherds abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them, and they were sore afraid. And the angel said unto them, Fear not, for behold, I bring you tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And this shall be a sign unto you, ye shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And suddenly, there with the angel, a multitude of the heavenly host, praising God and saying glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace and goodwill toward all men. And now this is a reading from Matthew. In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, asking, Where is the child who has been born king of the Jews? For we observed his star at its rising, and have come to pay him homage. When King Herod heard this, he was afraid, and all of Jerusalem with him. Then Herod secretly called all the wise men, and learned from them the exact time when the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem, saying, Go and search diligently for the child, and when you have found him, bring me word, that I may go and pay him homage. When they had heard the king, they set out, and there ahead of them went the star that they had seen at its rising, until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw that the star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy. On entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they knelt down to pay him homage. Then, opening their treasure chest, they laid before him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they left for their own country by another road. Here ends the reading. Thank you.
I invite you now to rise in body or in spirit, and let's sing together, Angels We Have Heard on High. Thanks, Joe. Thank you. Please be seated. Christmas Eve is a time set aside to celebrate a special birth, the birth of the baby Jesus, who grew up to be a great teacher. He taught kindness, fairness, and justice. These are qualities of a world that we want for all of our children. We believe that each night a child is born is a holy night. Each child is a holy child. All of our children have the potential that deserves to be nourished. All our children are worthy of our love and best care.
The Herdmans were absolutely the most incorrigible kids in the history of the world. They lied and stole and smoked cigars and talked dirty. And they cursed their teachers and they set fire to Fred Shoemaker's old broken down tool house. And I ought to know. I was just a kid myself when it happened. It was a terrific fire. Two engines, two police cars, and all the volunteer firemen. The fire chief gave all of us kids a lecture about playing with matches. Turns out, though, the neighbors had been pestering Mr. Shoemaker to do something about that old tool house because it was about to fall down anyway. So they said the fire was a blessing in disguise. I was always in the same grade with Imogene Herdman. And what I did was stay out of her way. You couldn't do it if you were pretty or smart or had anything unusual about you, like red hair or double-jointed thumbs. But if you were a medium kid like me and you kept your mouth shut, you did okay. As far as anyone could tell, Imogene was just like the rest of the Herdmans. She never learned anything either except dirty words and secrets about everybody. It was no good to get secrets on the Herdmans. Everybody already knew about the awful things they did. You couldn't even tease them about their parents. Nobody knew where Mr. Herdman was, and Ms. Herdman worked double shifts at the shoe factory and wasn't home much. They didn't seem to care. The Herdmans pretty much looked after themselves. The big ones taught the small ones everything they knew. And the proof of that was that the meanest Herdman of all was little Gladys, the youngest. We figured they were headed straight for hell by way of the state penitentiary until they got themselves mixed up with the church and my mother and our Christmas pageant. When Mrs. Helen Armstrong fell and broke her leg, my mother was put in charge of the Christmas pageant. Our Christmas wasn't what you would call four-star entertainment. Mrs. Armstrong breaking her leg was the only exciting thing that ever happened to it. The script was standard, that in the stable the shepherd, the star, and so were the costumes and the casting. You had your angels, your shepherds, your wise men, all the elementary school kids. Elmer Hopkins, the minister's son, had been Joseph for as long as anyone could remember. And my friend Alice was always Mary because she was such a goody two-shoes. So smart, so neat and clean, and most of all, so holy-looking. The girls made up the angel choir. They lined up according to height because nobody could sing parts. But this year was different. My stupid brother told the Herdmans that there would be cake at the rehearsal. And suddenly, they all wanted to be in the Christmas pageant.
I would like to be Mary in our pageant, but of course there can only be one Mary. So I'll ask for volunteers, and then we'll all decide together which girl should get the part.
That was pretty safe to say, since the only person who ever raised her hand was Goody Two-Shoes, Alice Wendelken. But Alice just sat there, chewing on a piece of her hair and looking down at the floor. And the only person who raised her hand this time was Imogen Herdman.
Did you have a question, Imogen?
No, I want to be Mary, and my older brother Ralph wants to be Joseph.
Mother just stared at them. She couldn't believe this. What she didn't know was that Imogen had bullied Alice into letting her be Mary. And Elmer Hopkins was relieved he didn't have to be Joseph again. Last year he tried to pay Grady Baker 50 cents to be Joseph, and he wouldn't do it. Nobody volunteered to be the wise men either, except Imogen's other bratty brothers. So there was my mother, stuck with a Christmas pageant full of Herdmans in the main role. When the flower committee took a potted geranium to Mrs. Armstrong and told her what was going on, she nearly fell out of bed, traction bars and all. She said that if she had been up and around, the whole thing would never have happened. And that made my mother so mad she couldn't see straight.
If she'd been up and around, it wouldn't have happened? That woman, she must be surprised that the sun is still coming up every morning without her to supervise. Helen Armstrong is not the only woman alive who can run a Christmas pageant. I've been willing to do the best I could under the circumstances, but now I'm going to make this the very best Christmas pageant ever, and I'm going to do it with the Herdmans. After all, they raised their hands and nobody else did, and that's that.
So, Mother called the first rehearsal. Everybody kept quiet and on the lookout for fear of missing something awful the Herdmans might do. One of the Herdman brothers knuckled my brother behind the ear, and one girl yelled as little Gladys went by. But Mother said she was going to ignore everything except blood. The little girl wasn't bleeding, and neither was Charlie. Even so, right away, Mother ran into trouble. Those bratty Herdmans peppered Mom with questions.
Where did they come from?
Where was the inn, and what's an inn anyway?
It's like a motel where people go to spend the night.
What people? Jesus?
Goody Two Shoes had to add her 2 cents.
Oh, honestly, Jesus wasn't even born yet. Mary and Joseph were there.
Why?
What happened first? Begin at the beginning.
The thing was, the Herdmans didn't know anything about the Christmas story. Well, they knew that Christmas was Jesus' birthday, but everything else was new to them. The shepherds, the wise men, the star, the stabled, and the crowded inn. So Mother said she had better begin by reading the story from the Bible. This was a pain in the neck for most of us because we knew the whole thing backward and forward.
Joseph and Mary, his espoused wife, being great with child.
Ralph, the Herdman, playing Joseph, yelled,
"Pregnant!"
The big kids giggled. The little kids wanted to know what was going on, and Mother pounded the floor with her foot to get everybody's attention.
"You're not supposed to be talking about people being pregnant. I'm going to tell my mother."
"Tell her what?" I was pretty sure she would, too, because she still wanted to be Mary. But there wasn't much I could do about it but pinch her. She yelped,
"Shh."
As Mother told the story, one of the Herdmans would yell, "What's that?" whenever they didn't understand anything.
"You mean there wasn't any room in the inn? Not even for Jesus?"
"Well, now, after all, nobody knew the baby was going to turn out to be Jesus."
Ralph quipped, "You said Mary knew. Why didn't she tell them?"
"I would have told them. Boy, would I have told them. What was the matter with Joseph that he didn't tell them? Her pregnant and everything? Who was that they laid the baby in? The manager? Is that like a bed? Why would they have a bed in the barn?"
"Well, that's just the point. They didn't have a bed in the barn. So Mary and Joseph had to use whatever there was. What would you do if you had a the baby and no bed to put the baby in?
We put Gladys in a dresser drawer.
Well, there you are. You didn't have a bed for Gladys, so you had to use something else. Mary and Joseph used a manger. A manger is a large wooden feeding trough for animals.
The brats got Mom going again with questions.
What were the wadded up clothes?
What?
You read about it. She wrapped him in wadded up clothes.
Oh, swaddling clothes. Long ago, people used to wrap their babies very tightly in big pieces of material so they couldn't move around. It made the babies feel cozy and comfortable.
Why didn't Mary get to name the baby?
Joseph didn't name the baby either. God sent an angel, the angel of the Lord, to tell Mary what his name should be.
I would have named him Bill. What did the angel do? Just like walk up and say, name him Jesus?
Yes.
I know what the angel said. She said his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace.
I could have hit her.
My God, he'd never gotten out of first grade if he had to write all that.
And so it went. They were really interested in Herod. When Mother said that Herod planned to put the baby Jesus to death, Imogene exclaimed,
"My God, he just got born and already they're out to kill him."
I figured they were interested in Herod because they liked him. He was so mean he could have been their ancestor, Herod Herdman. But I was wrong. They wanted somebody to be Herod so they could beat him up. I couldn't understand the Herdmans. They got so involved in it. Wanted to go after Herod, worried about Mary having her baby in a barn, and called the wise men a bunch of dirty spies for being in cahoots with Herod. After she finished the story, we got through the first rehearsal. During the second rehearsal, Mrs. McCarthy called the fire department because she smelled smoke in the women's washroom. It just turned out to be Imogene smoking cigars during a break in the rehearsal. But, well, while everyone was milling about on the street, the applesauce cake that the ladies on the potluck committee had been making burned up. When Reverend Hopkins heard about the fire, he asked Mother if we should call the whole thing off. He said the whole church was in an uproar and he didn't think anyone would come to see the pageant. But he was wrong. Everybody came to see what the Herdmans would do. The night of the pageant was the usual big mess all over the place. Baby angels getting poked in the eye by other baby angels' wings and grumpy shepherds tripping over their costumes. But everything settled down, and at 7:30, the pageant began. When we were finished singing, "Oh, We Believe in Christmas," Ralph and Imogene were there. Only for once they didn't come through the door pushing each other out of the way. They just stood there for a minute as if they weren't sure they were in the right place because of the spotlights, I guess, and the church being full of people. They look like the people you see on the 6 o'clock news, refugees in some strange, ugly place with all their boxes and sacks around them. It suddenly occurred to me that this was just the way it must have been for the real Holy Family, stuck away in a barn by people who didn't care much what happened to them. They couldn't have been very neat and tidy either, but more like this Mary and Joseph.
I don't think it's very nice to birth the baby Jesus. I said he had colic. Do you suppose he could have colic?
I didn't know why not. And then little Gladys, as the angel of the Lord, paraded up the aisle, Since Gladys was the only one in the pageant who had anything to say, she made the most of it, shouting,
"Hey dudes, unto you a child was born."
Then the wise men came in.
What have they got?
I don't know, but whatever they were carrying was heavy. They almost dropped it.
I knew this would happen. I bet it's something awful, like a burnt offering.
Well, they certainly did burn things down around town, but they hadn't burnt this yet. They were carrying a ham as an offering. And right away, I knew where it came from. My father was on the church charitable works committee. They gave away food baskets at Christmas, and this was the herdman's food basket ham. The herdmans had never before in their lives given anything away except lumps on the head, so you had to be impressed. When it was time for the wise men to leave the herdmans, when it was time for the wise men to leave, the herdmans forgot, or they didn't want to or something, because they didn't leave. They just sat there, and there wasn't anything anyone could do about it.
They were ruining the whole thing.
As a matter of fact, it made perfect sense for the wise men to sit down and rest. They had come a long way. As for ruining the whole thing, it seemed to me that the herdmans had improved it a lot just by doing what came naturally, like burping the baby, for instance, or thinking a ham would make a better present than a lot of perfumed oil. I wanted the pageant to continue with the herdmans in charge to see what else they would do that was different. Maybe the wise men would tell Mary about their problems with Herod, and she would tell him to go back and lie their heads off, or Joseph might go with them and get rid of Herod once and for all. I was so busy thinking about new ways to save the baby Jesus that I didn't notice Imogene at first. When I did, I almost dropped my hymn book on a baby angel. Imogene Herdman was crying. In the candlelight, her face was all shiny with tears, and she didn't even bother to wipe them away. She just sat there, awful old Imogene, in her crookedy veil, crying and crying and crying. I guess Christmas just came over her all at once, like a case of chills and fever, and so she was crying. Well, it was the best Christmas pageant we ever had. Everybody said so, but nobody seemed to know why. When it was over, people stood around the lobby of the church talking about it. There was something special. They couldn't put their finger on what. Now, whenever I think of the Christmas story, Mary is always going to look a lot like Imogene Herdman, sort of nervous and bewildered, but ready to clobber anyone who lays a hand on her baby. And the wise men are always going to be her bratty brothers bearing ham. When we came out of the church that night, it was cold and clear and crunchy snow underfoot and bright, bright stars overhead. And I thought about the angel of the Lord, Gladys with her skinny legs and her dirty sneakers sticking out from under her robe, yelling at all of us everywhere.
Well, what do you know? Turns out the Herdmans aren't really such bad kids after all. They're survivors, scrappy and mean, but they're also curious, full of questions. Really good questions. Everything about the Christmas story is news to them. They're hearing it all for the very first time. Imagine kids growing up with very little, relying on their wits and each other, hearing the Christmas story for the very first time. They remind me of the kids I used to work with when I was a social worker in Boston. Hard and crusty on the outside, pain in the neck, but with the ability to see right through all the BS to the heart of the matter. Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace, that is a lot to lay on a newborn, and Jesus probably wouldn't have gotten out of first grade if he'd had to write all that. And the Bible tells us that Herod was threatened by reports of the newborn king. He wanted the wise men to tell him where Jesus was so he could kill him. In the lyrics of the hauntingly beautiful Coventry Carol, which we'll hear in just a few minutes, mourn the loss of innocent baby boys born in the vicinity of Bethlehem, killed during Herod's decree. I'm with the Herdmans. I'd really like to posse up and go after Herod. Maybe not literally, but one thing's for sure. The Herdman kids, they're not complacent. They have a passion, a real passion for protecting the innocent. And they're practical, too. A ham is a much better gift for a family with nothing to eat, better than gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And in the end, the Christmas story breaks right through the hard, crusty shells protecting those Herdman kids and touches them, touches their hearts. They want to take care of that baby. They want to make sure he's warm and fed and dry and protected. They see baby Jesus and his parents. They see Herod and the wise men with eyes wide open. And they want to do something to help make it right. Their take on the Christmas story looks and feels different. People can't quite put their finger on it. But somehow, it's important. It feels real. The Christmas story is kind of edgy. It's about a family living on the edge. There's no room for them. There's no room for Mary and Joseph, even though she's just about ready to have a baby. A very vulnerable time. There's no room for Jesus and his message of love and peace. And the Herdman kids can relate. They know what it's like to live on the margins, to be different, not as comfortable or as cared for as most kids. And that's their gift. Their questions and their experience help them make more room in our heads and in our hearts for what is real. There have been a lot of allusions made recently to the parallels between the Christmas story and the experiences of refugee families fleeing from violence and deprivation in their countries of origin. When they make their entrance as Mary and Joseph, Imogene and Ralph Herdman, quote, look like people you see on the 6 o'clock news, refugees in some strange and ugly place. And it occurs to our storyteller that, quote, this is just the way it must have been for the Holy Family, stuck away in a barn by people who didn't much care what happened to them. We all hear stories on the evening news, the hardship of weeks, even months of travel on foot, by horse, by boat, by bus, any way that they can flee. The anguish of leaving their homes, not knowing what will happen or if they'll be able to keep their children safe. Not knowing so many things. The stories are heartbreaking. And yet, we have the ability to turn off the television set. We have the privilege of being able to turned towards a less edgy, more domesticated version of Christmas. Our lives are so very different. And it is a blessing. But it's hard to relate. It's especially hard to know what to do. The only firsthand experience I have with this is what my wife Kate is experiencing in the emergency department at Maine Medical Center. She was working in the pediatric department yesterday when I got a text saying that most of the kids that were coming in yesterday were from other countries and that they were working with a lot of interpreters. The languages included two kinds of Portuguese, Lingala, French, Arabic, and Farsi. This is in Portland, Maine. An article in the Portland Press Herald this week estimates that there are currently 3,000 asylum seekers in Portland right now. They're straining emergency resources like the hospital and emergency shelters to critical levels. I'm not sure exactly what's happening here in New Hampshire, but I know some asylum seekers are making it across the border, and they're coming to Portland. They're not just trapped at the border or being deported. Some of them are finding their way to New England. They are literally now our neighbors. My question for you this Christmas Eve is this: what can we do to listen to the voices of people living on the edge? People who can show us what's real and help us to draw the circle wider. How can we make room for them? They're probably not going to show up at church and take over the Christmas pageant. And if they do, we'd be wise to let them take center stage and let them tell us their story. What's more likely is that we're going to have to step out of our comfortable, domesticated Christmas and go looking for them. We won't have to look far. The hungry, the lost, the lonely, the outcast, like the Herdman kids, they are our neighbors. Susan Henry Crowe is the exec of the United Methodist Church's Social Action